Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. A new study of national data shows that emergency room visits for school-age athletes with concussions has skyrocketed in recent years. That, coupled with the burnout that affects more young athletes, has people talking about the relative harm of youth sports. The Dispatch has been writing about it this week. Coming up later in the show is the lead author of that study I mentioned, Dr. Lisa Backhoes. She's an emergency room physician in Neptune, New Jersey, and also Dr. Thomas Pommering. He's medical director of Nationwide Children's Hospital Sports Medicine. He leads a team that provides specialized care to athletes with concussions. Right now we have two coaches. Scott Gordon is Dean of Students and Varsity Football Coach at Thomas Worthington High School. Scott, welcome to the show.
Good to be here.
Also, Roger Ingalls, he's Athletics Director at Ohio Wesleyan University in Delaware. He served as Ohio Wesleyan's baseball coach for 22 seasons, and he also has assisted in football and women's basketball. Roger, glad you could join us today.
Thanks, Ann, for having us.
A lot of the questions and the stories often are about parents. The root of the problem is with the parents, that they push their kids for any number of reasons. It used to be just to live vicariously through them and to relive their own heyday as athletes. Now it's often to get on a better team so that maybe you'll get into a better school or get a scholarship or this or that. But there's always – it's a means to an end. It's not an end in itself anymore. Do you see a big difference, say, Roger, from when you first started out in athletics as a kid yourself?
I think so. I think parents have always been a concern with athletics, and especially the little league parent that has been around for years and years. But I think you're seeing it more and more today with the different opportunities that are out there through the club sports, the number of showcases that are out there that kids are asked to come in their off seasons and display their talents, especially in the sport of baseball. And you're getting more involvement. Parents are participating more in their children's lives in all aspects of the college life, not just athletics.
So you're talking about at the college level, you're seeing this. And Scott, at the high school level, they're called helicopter parents or something like that?
Well, yeah, I've heard that term. But, parents are interested in what's best for their kids and, their children. And I really believe that most of them want just to give the best experience possible for their kids. And they want to leave no stones unturned, and they want to give them opportunities to prepare themselves athletically as well as academically. And so, they look to a variety of different ways to increase performance, to give kids opportunities to make the team, to excel on their team. And as you mentioned before, there is this carrot that's out there of, the athletic scholarship for college, which can be a dream that's not attainable in some cases, but there are plenty of people out there that are throwing that carrot out there. So parents are really trying to do the best that they can for their kids in all those different areas.
So Roger, you've been around college sports for 20 plus years. Is there more pressure coming from students and families and parents to get those scholarships, or is it the same as it always has been?
No, I think there's a drive. There's more of a drive now for students in high school to seek that scholarship opportunity. I think it's many of the parents aren't as informed as we would like them to be in terms of the number of scholarship opportunities that are truly out there. And, in the sport of baseball, the thing that we found in Division III is we were competitive with a lot of Division I programs because of our need-based financial aid, because so many baseball players attend colleges on partial scholarships. They only have, around at one time they were around 11 and a half scholarships in Division I, and most of those are split. I think 60-65% of the available scholarships are in the sport of football and basketball. So for a lot of the other non-revenue sports, there's not as many full scholarship opportunities out there as I think a lot of parents think.
This is All Sides with Ann Fisher. My guests, Scott Gordon, Thomas Worthington High School football coach and dean of students, and also Roger Ingalls. He's athletics director at Ohio Wesleyan University. We're talking about two big issues in youth sports these days, burnout, and eventually we'll be talking about the concussion issue. It's it's skyrocketed in recent years, and we're going to talk about that with a couple of physicians and also Roger and Scott in a few minutes. If you have a question or comment for the coaches, give us a call, 614-292-8255. 8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You know, Roger, we were talking earlier about that burnout factor, and I guess I was kind of directing my focus on Scott, but you said you have the same issues at the college level, that once they get to college, that's another release point.
Yeah, I think what you find is a lot of kids sometimes at the college level will walk in and they'll realize that maybe they've been participating in a sport for the wrong reason. And they get to the college situation where now they're away from mom and dad, or they're away from external, you know, other pressures. And they realize that maybe there's other things that they'd like to do in their life than spend the time in athletics. And we'll see kids that walk away from it. And I've seen with my own children, watching them play through the years, a number of kids that just go through that burnout where, you know, they just have too much of something. And the one area that I would say at the college level that we really notice is the lack of multi-sport athletes that come to us. We used to, 25 years ago, I had a number of baseball and football or basketball and baseball combination kids, and we're getting fewer and fewer of those because kids are being pressured to do so much in the off season that they just don't have the time and the ability to commit to playing more than one sport.
They can't maintain that level in more than one sport. And Scott, you must have the same problem.
Well, I don't think it's so much that they can't maintain that level in more than one sport, but we see a lot of specialization now, and a lot of that is driven by parents at an early age.
You mean specialization within one sport?
Well, specializing in one sport, putting all your eggs in one basket for that end goal, which may be something that's, you know, again, the perceived opportunities for college scholarships or to become a professional athlete. We've seen the Tiger Woods situation with his father, Earl, who started him off at a very, very early age on a very strict regimen to make him the best that he could be. We saw the same thing that the Jennifer Capriati model with her father. And so we have a lot of parents that are trying to make their kids the very best that they can be in a certain sport from a very early age, and utilizing all the opportunities and all the new opportunities that are out there for each specific sport. And we're getting fewer and fewer that are just trying to become well-rounded individuals and using sport as part of their overall educational experience and the love of the game and the opportunity to participate. And it's become much more difficult for kids to be able to just play for the love of the game because of all the pressures to be the very best and to be sports specific in what you do.
Well, just for some sports, just to get on the high school team, there's a lot of competition now, particularly in some of the schools where they're the big schools where there are a lot of kids. So you feel like you have to specialize just to get on your high school team.
Well, that's absolutely true. That's the perception that people have, and part of that is because kids are choosing to specialize in one sport and they're doing what they call sport-specific training. They're hiring personal trainers. They're going to training centers, utilizing sports psychology, nutritional supplements, anything that they can do to get the edge so that they can be the higher performers on their team and make their team. So we're seeing much, much more of that.
So what do you say to the kids when you're trying to – well, I don't know, Roger. Do you go out and recruit? Is that something that you do, or how does it work at your level?
Well, when I was coaching, obviously I was out at high school games and recruiting on a high level, just like you would at Division II or Division I.
Right.
And now in my role as athletic director, I try to meet with student athletes when they come to visit different programs. And what I encourage them to do is to play multiple sports, get involved in as many different things as possible. Watched a number of kids over the years, you know, the Little League program, usually the biggest kid's a catcher, and a kid that throws the hardest is your pitcher, and your best athlete plays shortstop. Those may not be the same kids that can play those positions best when they get to high school, but they kind of get rolled into a position. So we tell them that we want them to experiment. We want them to do as many things as possible because when they get to our level or even at the high school level, they may find that they're better at one sport than another. My daughter's a good example. She was a volleyball player through junior high and even into her freshman year of high school. Came to me right before the start of her sophomore year and said she had changed her mind and wanted to play field hockey, and immediately became a very good field hockey player. But it was one of those things that she found that she just was a better fit there. And she was just targeting into just volleyball. That would have never happened. I think that what you can do with kids is you need to be able to make sure that they combine a balance to their life with the athletic programs that they have. And where kids get into trouble is when they lose that balance between the academics and the athletics and being a kid. They've got to have time to be a kid, especially some of these young kids. You know, I see 12-year-olds playing 80 baseball games a summer. It's just crazy.
And, Scott, you know, you have a 14-year-old freshman in high school. You have a daughter who's a senior getting ready to go off to college next year. She's got a college scholarship, an athletic scholarship. But you are also seeing them because of your youngster at the younger level when they're getting burned out before you even get a chance to work with them at the high school level.
Well, you know, sure. Roger, you know, mentioned the 12-year-old baseball players playing 80 games in a summer, and those kinds of things are a reality. There has to be a balance between the interest that the kids have in the sport and just what is too much. And right now I've got a 14-year-old freshman who at this moment is planning on playing three sports in high school. That's a very difficult thing to do nowadays. It was much more common, I think, when Roger and I were coming up. But it's much more difficult to do now, and not just because of all the activities combined with the academic workload, but you have competing interests with coaches in the off season wanting time of these players. And it's not just training time or preparation, but, you know, there are fundraisers that are happening now that coaches expect their athletes to participate in, even if it's not during their sport. That puts a lot of pressure on young kids to be pulled in many different directions by coaches, teachers, and parents. And it's a lot of responsibility put on some young kids' shoulders, and it's very difficult for them to figure out which way to go.
We're going to take a break right now. We'll return with Scott Gordon, Thomas Worthington High School football coach, and also Roger Ingalls, athletics director at Ohio Wesleyan University. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820 NPR News.
I'm Tom Ashbrook, host of NPR's On Point. One thing I love about radio is the intimacy of the human voice, the sound of people making an honest effort to understand the world and each other. That's the effort we make here every day. Come join us for the next On Point.
On Point will be here at 1 o'clock this afternoon. This is WOSU 820 NPR News. 78 degrees in downtown Columbus at 10:19 this morning. Sunshine today and a hot one with a high of 91.
Support for WOSU comes from the law firm Isaac Brandt Ledman & Teeter, offering legal services to Central Ohio since 1936. Isaac Brandt Ledman & Teeter, big enough to win, small enough to care. On the web at isaacbrandt.com.
All Sides with Ann Fisher continues. This is WOSU 820 NPR News.
Children learn a lot about life from sports. Teamwork, discipline, and fair play. Values that can only be passed on by a kind, caring, mature head coach.
We got to pummel them at all costs. I want you to play dirty if you have to, but don't get caught. Hit the field. Let's go.
Okay, welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Still in the studio with me, Scott Gordon, Thomas Worthington High School football coach and dean of students, and also Roger Ingalls. He's athletics director at Ohio Wesleyan University. And joining us now, Dr. Lisa Backhouse, a pediatric emergency doctor at the Jersey Shore University Medical Center in Neptune, New Jersey. She was the lead author in a recently published study that showed a significant increase in reported cases of concussions in child athletes. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
We were just talking about, you know, youth athletics and some of the things that drive people to maybe drive their kids or drive children to drive themselves too far. You kind of catch them on the back end, and tell us about your study and what you've learned.
Sure. So basically, we wanted to look specifically at younger children. There's tons of data out there about college athletes and professional athletes, and in terms of concussion and head injuries. And we wanted to specifically look at younger kids and how they compare to their adolescent counterparts in terms of how often concussion occurs. And what we looked at basically emergency department visits using a national database. And what we found was that although not surprisingly, there are more concussions noted in older kids, we do see a great number of concussions also in the younger population, the 8 to 13-year-old population. And we also found that concussions have been on the rise over the last 10 years. At least emergency department visits for concussions have quite significantly over the last 10 years, which we found a little bit surprising in our study.
Concussions aren't new, though. What do you attribute the increase to?
So we're not 100% sure. We definitely have to do more research on that. But what we hope. And what we, on a positive note, is that we hope that more people are recognizing the importance of seeking medical attention for concussion, and that the increased awareness that's come out thanks to the NFL and thanks to the news media has caused people to be more aware. However, we also think that what you mentioned before, people, both athletes themselves as well as parents, are pushing their kids very hard. More hard than they ever have, and that there's more competitiveness in sport at a younger and younger age. And also, as you know, there's a huge obesity problem in this country, and our children overall are getting larger. So a child who 10 years ago, the size of an 8-year-old, may be the size of a 13-year-old now. And you have such a vast range of weights and sizes of kids, that someone who's 9 who weighs a certain weight may be playing with someone who's double that weight.
Yeah, there is a big spread there.
Yeah, so they're obviously going to be more apt to injure themselves, as well as the larger people. We know that children who are overweight have more of a tendency to injure themselves. So these are all just, you know, hypotheses that we have. Mm-hmm. Definitely have to look into it more, but those are our theories.
Scott, can you talk about that? I mean, the equipment's better than it's ever been. What do you do at the high school level? Are kids being pushed harder because the equipment's better? I've heard that. They hit them harder. You don't have to worry as much, or what? What are you doing at your level to address this issue?
Well, and you know, the equipment is better, and I think that without question, that's a good thing. I don't think that you see us trying to push them harder because the equipment is better. We have, for the last 20 years, been very, very conscious of proper tackling techniques and not using your helmet or your head as a weapon or as a battering ram. So we've been very conscientious about maintaining that kind of position. But I think what you're seeing is through all of the extra training and new training techniques and the constant preparation, you are seeing kids get bigger, faster, and stronger. And, you know, that mass plus acceleration creates more force. And I think because of that, you're starting to see more more head injuries. In addition, we have much more participation now. So you're seeing head injuries not only in sports that normally require helmet usage, but even in sports where kids don't normally wear helmets. There's increased participation in soccer, and I think there are some studies and to indicate that the heading of a soccer ball has increased head injuries. You've got sports now that you have a lot of contact, like girls lacrosse, women's lacrosse, where they do not use headgear like the boys do, that put them at an increased risk. So I think in addition to kids becoming bigger, faster, and stronger and creating that increased force, you just have much more participation. You see a lot more injury as a result of that.
Yeah, Dr. Backhouse, is there does this go across the sporting venue? I mean, is it all sports you're seeing an increase? Did you look at it? Did you break it down that way?
We didn't break it down. We looked at our top five sports, which were, not too surprisingly, football, basketball, baseball, soccer, and ice hockey. And we basically used that for the overall trends. We did break down over the last 5 years the individual sports, and the numbers were, obviously pretty high, but we didn't look necessarily at the trends. But I agree. I totally agree with your other participants. They, although sport, at least from the data we looked at, sport participation in those five sports as a whole has actually been decreasing just slightly. Certain sports are definitely increasing popularity, like lacrosse, like soccer, and those are the places that maybe we need to look a little further into prevention strategies for, and look at ways that we can make those things safer. I think football, gets a bad rap because it is such a contact sport. But I think overall, especially with, the great attention with the NFL, people are being more cognizant of, proper tackling techniques and proper equipment usage. Although I think in the younger population, still a lot needs to be done. I've been at many a practice where, kids are tackling each other and helmets are half of the time on the ground because they're not properly fitting and things like that. So, and that was a point of the study, is we wanted to show that, this does happen in younger kids too. And the outcomes of those kids, of head injuries in the younger population could be, this we have to do more research on, could be worse, even worse than in the older kids. So we need to say, hey, this is happening in them too. We need to put some attention on them as well.
One of the things that I guess worries me about little kids is their reporting techniques. They're
Absolutely.
Not necessarily good reporters. Mm-hmm. When they come into the emergency room, mm-hmm. what do you ask them to get the information you need to make a diagnosis?
We have very sneaky techniques sometimes to get them to tell us what we need to know. A lot of times it's just watching the child, watching them walk, watching them run, having a lot of input from the parents to say, is this normal for them? Oftentimes they present to us with odd symptoms, so they're presenting to us with asking the same question over and over again. Not asking what they had for dinner when the mom says, I've told them 20 times what we had for dinner. Oftentimes that's how they present, or they're just saying they have headache. But oftentimes we have to do some fancy techniques to try to figure out, get the little pieces of the puzzle all together. It is a puzzle. Concussion is a clinical diagnosis. CAT mm-hmm. scans don't show anything.
Right.
MRIs don't really show anything. So we have to kind of figure it out through clinical ability. And that's one thing that I'm hoping through this study is that we can work on more objective tools to try to figure out the severity of a head injury and then follow them over the long term. There's neuropsychological testing, there's balance testing, there's lots of things that can be done. We just have to kind of get them into our emergency rooms, get them into our medical practices, and get them into the sports themselves. So we have a baseline to work off of. And that's what we're hoping will maybe eventually, hopefully, come out mm-hmm. of this study.
High school and probably college players can be deceptive as well. They may not be it might not be because they're bad reporters. It might be because they don't want to be kept out of the game. Scott Gordon, how do you deal with that at Thomas Worthington?
Well, that does happen. That kids want to stay in the game. When we talk about head injury specifically, though, it's a little bit more difficult for kids to hide that.
Okay.
And as spoken before, we do baseline testing, concussion baseline testing in conjunction with Children's Hospital and Dr. Thomas Pomering, who I think we mentioned earlier, where we get a good baseline on all of our athletes when they are in a normal state, so that we can compare after a head injury, whether there has been some serious damage. It's just much more difficult for kids to mask that. They can tell you that, my arm doesn't hurt, and they can They can hide some of the other things, and they purposefully try to underreport injuries. There's no question about it. But not only is it more difficult with the head injuries, but we're much more skeptical and cautious when it comes to that also. So we do our best to try to overcome that hesitation by the players in reporting injuries.
Is I know, Roger, that at Ohio Wesleyan University you have a concussion policy. And I want to talk about that, but I also want to know, is the issue of concussion, is the issue of long-term physical damage if you don't report injuries, that concussions and otherwise, is that a conversation you have with your players at the beginning of a season? Do you talk to them about what the dangers are of withholding information?
Oh, definitely. We our head athletic trainer, Todd Miller, does a great job with the baseline testing with all of our student athletes. We do the same thing that Scott's talking about that they do at Thomas Worthington. And during that conversation, we talk about the danger of underreporting or not reporting a head injury. You know, once you get the first concussion, the studies show that the second, the third, and the fourth are so much easier to get after that first one. So we really need to be cautious with the first one, make sure that that's completely healed before you allow a student athlete to come back into competition. I think we're finding with a lot of our student athletes coming in that with the emphasis in club and other sports and the push for a lot of parents to get their kids to compete at the highest level, we're finding a lot of kids who are competing at higher levels than they probably should be. In other words, the 8-year-old is playing on a 12-year-old team.
Yeah, that's getting more and more common.
Yes, and that I think puts kids at risk. And you're finding it not only with concussions, but you're finding it with just overuse injuries and other injuries where kids aren't physically mature enough to handle. And there's a huge difference between the 10-year-old and the 13-year-old or the 13 and the 18. And we see it on the college level. There's a big difference between a 17 and 18-year-old football player and a 21 or 22-year-old. And you'll see it when you watch, you know, Ohio State play. Most of those freshmen that walk in that first year don't play. They're redshirted, and there's a reason they're redshirted is they need to get physically bigger and stronger to compete with those kids who are 22 and 23 years old.
Scott, is that a conversation you have with your players? Don't hide this stuff from us. We need to know.
Well, most definitely, and we speak with our parents and athletes at the beginning of every year that the health, safety, and welfare of the student athlete is paramount. And, you know, our sports medicine staff is very, you know, they're excellent. They're very well trained. And they're the final word on what happens with student athletes regarding injuries. And we make it very clear that we expect them to be totally upfront with our staff on injuries and to keep them as safe as possible. That's paramount in our program.
Dr. Backos, in the emergency room, what kind of pushback do you get from folks when they bring their kids in when you try to tell them, you know what, he's got to sit out for at least 3 weeks or whatever you determine? Mm-hmm. And, of course, usually you probably refer to a family doctor or something like that. Mm-hmm. But are they trying to tell you that, no, really, it's not as bad as it looks?
Yeah, and we get that all the time. And it's one of the more difficult parts of our job. And the way I usually explain it to parents is that if your child had a broken leg, you wouldn't be asking me, can they play in their state championship 2 days from now? You would just assume that they can't play. And it's the same thing. You know, they have a serious brain injury. Their brain needs time to heal. And I think when you try to put it in that perspective, oftentimes they take it a little bit more seriously. But that's hopefully one of the things that we can get out to parents and make it clear to them that this is a serious thing, that there are serious consequences, and that their children, you know, need to rest, and that it's much more important that they're healthy than if they make their state championship game the next day.
It probably would be helpful if you could show them an X-ray or an MRI, wouldn't it?
Of course. It would make it so much easier if we had something that we could say, look, this is, you know, same, like I mentioned, with a broken bone. Look at this bone. It is not in the right place, you know. But we don't have that, unfortunately. So it is a lot of education, and it takes a lot of time to try to explain that to parents. But again, because the awareness is growing, people are taking it more seriously, and we're very thankful for that because it makes our job a little bit easier. And we definitely rely on our primary care pediatricians and family practice doctors to enforce what we say, and that's why it's important to get the word out to them as well that this is an important issue and that they need to be following the guidelines and kind of back us up on what we tell them.
614-292-8513. I know we made a little bit of a reversal there. Or we changed directions pretty quickly on our topic, but I wanted to you know we can still talk about the issues of club sports versus high school sports and all the other issues that involve youth athletics. And Patty, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Hi. I'm the mother of a recently graduated senior from high school, and we lived through the trauma of trying to allow our daughter to be a sort of a general athlete. She loves the game of softball. My concern was...
Wait a minute, the trauma?
Yeah, kind of. of being able to, you know, get onto teams and have those skills you need to get there. And okay. What we found was if you didn't participate in the club sports in the summer, and if you didn't do it early and every year, partly your skills lagged, but also the lineups were being formed on those club teams. And one of the problems I saw is that there's no regulation of those club teams. They're run by parents. And so you have some inevitable favoritism of mostly the case of dads who are out there coaching these club teams, and their kids are getting the playing time, or they're getting more of the playing time. And it was difficult because, you know, our daughter loved the sport and basically got closed out as high school proceeded.
Scott, is that a frustration for you as well?
Well, I tell you, you know, Roger maybe has some more experience with this, having been involved in baseball where you have...
It's more of an issue,
yeah,
right?
You know, there really are three different areas that you look at. You look at the youth sports with the real young kids. You look at high school athletics and scholastic sport. And then the club teams, which, you know, they all have different interests at stake. You know, football is the only sport that does not have any club affiliation whatsoever, and that's mandated by the Ohio High School Athletic Association. But I've had a lot of experience with it as a father and as a parent. There's a lot of pressure for athletes to participate in the clubs, and to some extent, the colleges recruit more from the clubs than they do the scholastic teams. Now, that's not for all sports, but some of them, that's the case. So there's a lot of pressure on parents and athletes that, hey, I have got to participate in my club team in order to, you know, reach the goal that I've set for myself. And, you know, it's a lot of pressure. And once more, that's just one more competing interest on kids that want to play for the love of the game and want to play multiple sports. And, you know, it stretches our kids' time that much more and makes it more difficult for them.
Roger, is that the case that there's more recruiting going on, or at least more than there used to be from the club level than the scholastic?
Oh, I think so in a number of sports. I think in lacrosse you're seeing that quite a bit. It's been for years that way in soccer. You know, college coaches are basically human in that they're going to find the easiest way to see the most number of kids that they can in the shortest amount of time. And for a lot of them, that means to go to these club tournaments and these different showcase events and try and see a lot of kids in one-day period. You might go to a lacrosse tournament, for instance, up at Lake Placid. You could go up to New York and watch 12 teams play in one day, and they may have some of the best players from around the country. That doesn't mean that that's all the good players out there. And in baseball, it used to be with American Legion, then it's become into Connie Mack and so many other programs that a lot of the college coaches can't go in the spring to watch the high school games as often because they're playing at the same time. Mm-hmm. So they use those summer times and those other experiences to get out and see as many kids as possible. It's a tough situation, and I feel for Patty because I think I understand, you know, as a parent, you want your kids to be kids and you want them to have an opportunity to develop. And as Scott said, you know, different club teams, different AAU teams are all formed for different reasons. And you have to be very diligent in your, as a parent, to make sure that you put your children into the best situation for them. We've had kids who have walked into our program over the years in baseball that maybe weren't the most talented or most skilled kids, or maybe hadn't had the coaching some of the others, who became good players for us because they got an opportunity. And that's what most parents want. It's just be able to put their kids in a situation where they have an opportunity to get better.
Patty,
one piece of good news at the at the end of the story is, so she's off at college now, and she's discovered Ultimate Frisbee. And it turns out your outfield skills are pretty good for Ultimate Frisbee. She made a diving catch the other day, and they all think she's legitimate. So she's pretty excited about that. Awesome.
We all find our path, don't we, Patty?
That's right.
All righty. Thanks for the call. We have to take a break right now. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820 NPR News.
See the new lineup of public affairs programming on Friday nights from WOSU-TV. Starting at 8 is Washington Week, followed by Columbus on the Record at 8:30. Continuing at 9 is the McLaughlin Group. And at 9:30, PBS presents Need to Know, a new program with an innovative broadcast and web approach to news gathering and reporting. Watch the new public affairs lineup every Friday night beginning at 8 on WOSU-TV.
You're listening to WOSU 820 NPR News. Thanks for joining us for All Sides with Ann Fisher. In 20 minutes at 11 o'clock, hour two of the program will be here. Sunday night, HBO won 5 Emmys for Temple Grandin, a biopic about the renowned author and agricultural scientist who has autism. At 11 o'clock, we'll hear from Temple Grandin herself, her mother, and the film's executive producer. Join us at 11 for hour two of All Sides with Ann Fisher. It's 80 degrees in downtown Columbus at 10:42 this morning. Sunny skies today, another warm day with a high of 91. There is a slight chance of rain tonight, but mainly after 3 a.m., cloudy skies, a low of 68 degrees. A good chance of rain for Friday, cloudy skies and cooler with a high of 80. And looking ahead to Saturday, sunny skies and a cooler day with a high of 72. All Sides with Ann Fisher continues. This is WOSU 820 NPR News.
Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Joining us now, Dr. Thomas Pommering. He's Medical Director of Nationwide Children's Hospital Sports Medicine. He leads a team that provides specialized care to athletes with concussions. Welcome, Dr. Pommering.
Hi, Ann. Welcome. Thank you very much for having me on.
You know, we've been talking about concussions sort of in a scatological way. What is a concussion and why? Can you tell us what it is, and are they more dangerous in children than adults?
Yeah, that's a great question. Concussion is actually something where there's an impact onto the brain or face, and it causes a brief but fairly noticeable disruption in how the brain works. So often young athletes will have headache or dizziness or nausea or light sensitivity, sound sensitivity. They'll sort of not look, seem like themselves, in terms of their personality, and they may have some short-term memory loss right surrounding the injury.
I was surprised when I was reading about this that when you talk about taking a break after a concussion, it's not just a physical break. It's not just a break from sports, but a lot of times it's from studying, from television, from being on the computer and that kind of thing.
Yeah, that's important because, the brain does a pretty good job in most instances of healing itself, but it needs to have a little bit of a head start, a little bit of a fair chance at kind of resuming the normal physiology in the brain and resuming the energy stores, the glucose stores. So we do, I always kind of tell the kids I'm going to make you a monk for a week or so, or give you an excuse to be a slacker and take away all the stuff you really like to do, like your video games and texting and TV and computer, and just to kind of give them a little bit of a head start into healing.
I would imagine, Dr. Bakos, that that's a hard thing to explain to people, too.
It is. Yeah, especially in an emergency room setting.
Yeah.
It's hard. They don't know you, meaning me as a physician. It's the first time you're meeting them. So it's often difficult to get that across, and it definitely takes time. It takes time and good explanation to try to get across the seriousness of it.
I wanted to talk a little bit about gender differences in concussion cases. some studies have shown that girls are more vulnerable. And Roger, your daughter, Sarah, case, it was highlighted in a New York Times story in 2007. Can you tell us about Sarah and where she's at right now and what she went through?
Sure. Sarah, as a sophomore in high school, was hit in the head with a field hockey ball. And it was an interesting way we found out about it, I guess. I came home at 8 o'clock at night, and Sarah was sitting on our front steps crying. And I asked her what was wrong, and she said that she had missed the school bus and her mom was going to have to drive her to school. And I said,
and
Sarah,
this was at night.
8 o'clock okay. at night. I said, I saw you get on the bus this morning. But she was convinced it was early morning and she had missed the bus. So I walked in and I asked my wife, I said, did Sarah happen to get hit in the head or something at practice? And she said, yeah, they said she got hit with a ball, but I think she's okay. And not being trained in concussions.
How long ago was this?
This would have been 3 years ago.
Okay.
And, you know, Joe wouldn't have known that she had a head injury. And so I told her, I said, we're going to take her up to the hospital and have her checked because I think she might have a concussion. And so we took her up, and she had a severe concussion. She was to the point that she didn't know her own name for 2 days. She didn't know how she got hit. She went through a long rehab period. And to make a long story fairly short, she's went through three other concussions. Her last one she received when she actually raised up, and one of her teammates had opened a locker above her head, and she raised up and bumped her head, and it just came that easy.
Okay.
So she's went through a number of treatments and care, and she had actually decided to stay away now. She doesn't compete in any kind of team competition. She's taken up the sport of golf and is a member of our golf team up at Ohio Wesleyan. But, you know, she went through a lot of struggles. Academically, it really put her behind. She had trouble doing just what doctor was saying in terms of being able to concentrate, not being able to read, not being able to remember what she read. She could remember things spoken to her, but she couldn't she could read a story and not remember anything about it in a half hour after she read it.
Did it scare you to death?
Well, it scared me quite a bit. And having had one myself when I was younger and not knowing what it was, it kind of brought back those memories of what happened when I was in high school and realizing how dangerous this could be. And then as you start to do research now when you have your own child involved and you find some of the stories and some of the injuries that have occurred with children across the country, it's really a scary thought. And I think that's a reason why the New York Times story that came out was part of a series that they had started with the NFL. And I think that series in itself has done more to raise the consciousness across the country in terms of what concussions are and to make people more aware. And that may be one of the reasons why we're starting to notice so many more of them. 2 years ago, we had 5 on our women's basketball team. And that's just an unbelievable number. It wasn't, you know, we thought, is it something we're doing? We weren't doing anything out of the ordinary. It's just kids were going in and maybe bumping a head on a rebound or, you know, doing just normal, typical basketball things. But I think it's the fact that we now are a little bit more aware. We now start to pay attention. I think that's one of the reasons why we're seeing a jump in numbers.
So, Dr. Pommering, is that your experience that girls tend to be more vulnerable to this?
Yeah, I think there is some research and just some clinical experience that shows that they may be a little more susceptible. I think also that, you know, girls' athletics have expanded so much. They're playing lacrosse now. They're playing contact sports that they weren't involved in before. They're playing harder. They're bigger and stronger and faster. So they're probably exposed more as well. I think it's important to also understand that concussions in our young athletes who are 18 and younger may be a different entity than the adult athletes.
Yeah.
They may be more susceptible. They may take longer to heal. And they're also at risk for a rare but terrible phenomenon called second impact syndrome, where the brain hasn't completely normalized. They get hit again. It doesn't have to be a big hit. That sets off a cascade of events where the brain swells out of control very rapidly, and they herniate and die within a few minutes. You know, half of them won't survive that condition. The other half who do are not normal again. So it's rare, but it's something we've only seen in young athletes and not in adults. So I think that's important for coaches and parents to know that, you know, once we've decided you have a concussion, we really need you to get you healed back before we put you back in harm's way again.
Dr. Backhouse, where you work in Neptune, New Jersey, We have a Facebook message from John right now. I'll just read that and then get your observations on this. Is it true that cheerleaders get injured more often than football or basketball players? With all of the tumbling, I'd assume they'd get hurt pretty often.
Yeah, I think there's two ways to answer that. One is there are more total football injuries related to concussion and other things because there's just more players playing football. But
okay.
There are more injuries per cheerleader because they're doing a lot of dangerous stuff. They're stunning and flying and that kind of stuff. So, you know, they have a pretty high rate of injuries for the amount of cheerleaders that are actually participating and competing.
It's the same thing for ice hockey. We found that ice hockey actually has higher rates of concussion versus football players. But again, you know, throughout the country, much less children play ice hockey than they play football.
Really? No, I'm just kidding. And I feel better about not making the cheerleading team, too. 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. So, Dr. Backhaus, what about the gender differences? Is it something that you've seen in your practice?
We didn't actually look at gender differences in the study per se, which is something we hopefully do in future studies. But in terms of just in our daily practice, I would say generally it's pretty equal. We've definitely seen I trained up in Providence and in Boston where hockey is a huge thing. So and especially men's hockey. So that's the majority of the players that we saw were ice hockey players.
Maybe
I'm a little skewed in that way, and because I've probably seen more male athletes only because they tend to play hockey more often.
Now, what about equipment? Are you impressed with the equipment, or are you of the mind that the better the equipment gets, the harder they hit?
Yeah, I think both are true. As there are take football for an example, if the helmets have improved in the way they protect the athlete, they've also become a better, more efficient weapon. But I think sometimes the equipment isn't the problem. It's whether the rules are enforced when it comes to spearing or head-to-head contact or boarding in hockey. And I think we really need, you know, those rules were set in place for a reason, but I think they need to be enforced as well.
And I agree. I think that, you know, Scott and Thomas, you know, you guys seem to be doing a phenomenal job in your institutions, following the rules, making sure people are following them and are aware. But that's not true across the country, and especially in the younger kids, where, you know, you have just, you know, some local father coaching the local team, they may not be as aware, and that's what we're hoping to bring, that awareness to every level, not just the highest level of competition.
You know, we were talking about Sarah Ingalls a little earlier, and we do have an interview with Sarah that's going to be – it's on our Facebook page, All Sides with Ann Fisher Facebook. You can also go to WOSU.org/allsides and see it there on our website if you want to hear from Sarah herself and hear her talk about her experiences herself. Her dad's with us today, Roger Ingalls. He's athletics director at Ohio Wesleyan University. Also, Scott Gordon at Thomas Worthington High School. He's the football coach there and the dean of students. And on the phone, we have Dr. Lisa Backhaus. She's an emergency room physician in Neptune, New Jersey, and the lead author of a study that shows that emergency room visits for school-age athletes with concussions has skyrocketed in recent years. And in Columbus, we have Dr. Pomerang. It's right in front of my face, Dr. Thomas Pomerang. He's at Nationwide Children's Hospital. He is the director of their sports medicine. What kind of advice, Scott, do you give parents when you're talking to them about what to look for in their kids when it comes to injuries?
Well, you know, that just goes along with the normal communication of being a parent. You know, you always want to look out for the best interest of your kids. And, you know, whether it's any activity or anything in school or a sport, you want to ask, you know, how did things go? What happened? And typically they're going to give you some indication that if something bad happened, what it was. And you just need to have the communication and be the adult, because the kids aren't always going to recognize that this needs to be taken care of. That's the parent's job. But it's just the communication involved.
What do you say, Dr. Pomerang or Dr. Backhaus, when a parent says, gosh, I just hate to take them off the field. You know, they're having so much fun. What do you say to them, Dr. Pomerang?
Well, I think, again, a big part of our concussion visit is education. You know, talk to the parents and the athlete about what's going on and talk about, you know, kind of what we do to get them back. And that it's important that they're honest with us about their symptoms, because we make a lot of decisions based on that. We don't have, you know, concussion is not something you diagnose with a CT or an MRI or another imaging study at this point. So we really need to put things in perspective and tell them how important it is to do the right thing so they can go back safely and don't have another concussion or a complication such as second impact syndrome. And I think, you know, that's just important to kind of spend some time talking about that.
Besides second impact syndrome, are you more likely to get a concussion more easily the second, third, fourth time around than you would be the first time?
Oh, sure. There are a lot of studies that are showing increased susceptibility, you know, 2-3 times more likely, even after just the second or third concussion. And some of that depends on how close together they are and how significant they are. But, you know, each concussion is different. And for it's, I think parents really put the pressure on the first physician who's seeing them, whether that's in the emergency room or elsewhere, how long are they going to be out? We really need to resist the temptation to give them a prognosis, because these symptoms evolve over time and everyone is treated sort of individually.
Mm-hmm. And Dr. Bakos, did you look at the frequency per student or per patient, how many times they've had a concussion, or was it just across the board you looked at them overall?
It was just across the board in this study, but definitely something we want to look at in the future.
Okay. Well, we're just about out of time. I want to refer people to the Ohio Wesleyan University website to look at their concussion policy. It's very unusual, right, Roger?
Yes, it is. I mean, Todd has done a great job putting it together, and we're very conscious of making sure that we don't put our student athletes in any sort of jeopardy when they're competing. And I feel very confident we have the best medical care we can give them.
And also go to our website, WOSU.org/allsides, if you want to see that interview, hear that interview with Sarah Ingalls. That's Roger's daughter. She had several concussions, and she's out of team sports now, but she is a golfer. Just don't swing the club at her head. Thanks again, Roger, for being with us today.
Thank you for having me.
And also, Scott Gordon, a Thomas Worthington High School football coach. Scott, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you, Ann.
And Dr. Lisa Bakos, lead author, and that's the new study of national data that shows emergency room visits for school-age athletes with concussions has skyrocketed. Dr. Bakos, thanks for joining us.
You're very welcome. Thank you so much.
And Dr. Thomas Pommering at Nationwide Children's Hospital, where he's the sports medicine director. I'm glad you could be with us today.
Glad to be here. Thanks, Ann.
Okay, that's just about all the time we have for All Sides with Ann Fisher. Thanks for joining us. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820 NPR News.